Going to go ahead and get started, if y'all don't mind. Hi, my name is Mac McCarroll, and I'm the chair of the Faculty Senate for this academic year. Some of you folks might be new to the tables and don't know me. I teach in the School of Journalism and Broadcasting, associate professor, and I'm the news editorial coordinator for the school. Just for a little historical context, no one ran against me, which is a testament to the wisdom of the body and the lack of wisdom on the part of one of its members. But one of the things that I've learned very quickly in the month or so that I've been on the job is just how much you all have to do around here. Unfortunately, I'm going to be the one who's going to be asking some of you to do more. And I think these are the kinds of things that folks need to keep in context when they talk about all the money we make. First of all, I want to thank all of you for your service. I know a lot of you are working on standing committees of the Senate and university committees, and we've got some business that way to take care of later. Whether the Spirit made you the master of governance or whether your master infused you with the Spirit, doesn't really matter. We have important work to do in the Senate. It's good work, and I appreciate all your help. Would folks who have never served in the Senate before, would you all stand up? Okay, this is great. So we have an infusion of new blood, and for you senior senators, remember those faces when you want to hand out stuff to do. We do have some gaps to fill on our committee roles. Vice Chair Jennifer Hanley, who's already proven her worth, is kind of handling getting committee slots filled up. I'm happy to report that all our standing committees now do have chairs, one of them interim, but they're all chaired now. And so we've got a lot of business ahead, and it makes it a lot easier to get done when the committees are fully staffed. Two things I want to share with you briefly. There's been a lot of discussion since the convocation about the bi-term plan. I sent a memo out to the Senate Executive Committee members last week where I outlined what I believe the Senate's role will be in reviewing that proposal. My intentions, as I stated in the memo, are twofold. One, that it be fair, thorough, and deliberate, and two, that it be independent, that it be the Senate's work. And so with that in mind, what I've asked is that the chairs of our three standing committees, curriculum, academic quality, and faculty welfare, get together in the very near future, create some kind of a list, a division of labor that each committee can handle with regard to the many questions that surround the proposal, and then have those committees take on those tasks independently, and when they're done, those three folks get together and file a joint report back to the SEC. So far, no one on the SEC has said it was a bad idea, and a couple people thought it would work pretty well. So that's the way I see the review of that proposal on the Senate side of the equation going forward. To that end, I got an email today from one of your colleagues who was responding to my plan about the bi-term, and he sent me a quote from a fellow by the name of Will A. Foster, and I think he's a Congressional Medal of Honor winner, but he also might be a playwright. Who he isn't important, I guess, but what he said, I think, is. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. It represents the wise choice of many alternatives. And so whenever we do our business here, I think if we keep that in mind, we'll end up in the right place. With your support or non-objections, Ann Mead is here today to speak very briefly about the budget. And I thought rather than have her hang around through all our other stuff, if you don't mind, I'd like her to go ahead and make her presentation, and that way she can get on to managing the budget and we'll get on with our business.
Secretary won't be able to hear you if you don't use the, won't be able to record you if you don't use
the
mic.
Do I need to be recorded?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, well, I'll do my best. My problem is I didn't want to block the screen, so I was trying to figure out a way to do that, and I also have a notebook. So, I just want to say thank you, sir. And I have a hand signal, smoke signal over there to change the slides. I was thinking about So there's tuition and fees, $173 million being budgeted this year. The Council on Post-Secondary Education Board, the CPE, is the regulatory agency in regard to setting our rates. Their primary focus is on the resident undergraduate tuition, the affordability factor of Kentucky residents. They approve all tuition and fee rates, but they do allow the institution to have more flexibility as it relates to non-resident tuition and graduate tuition. It's about mid-April that we have approval from the CPE, and we can start building a budget based on what they call their maximum tuition parameter, which is what you'll hear in the news. The CPE approved this year a 5% increase in the maximum tuition parameter, meaning that we could increase our tuition and mandatory student fees. They make no distinction, and that we could increase them 5%. A mandatory student fee sometimes gets confusing to some audiences. The mandatory student fee has to be a fee that's charged to all students. So it's not a program fee, it's not a course fee. It may be mandatory for a course fee for a specific course, but we're talking about the Downing University Center's fee, the Downing University renovation fee, debt service, and we're talking about the athletic fee as the three mandatory student fees that are charged to students. So the Council on Post-Secondary Education does not differentiate between tuition and mandatory student fees. They combine that number and then determine what that increase can be. When we build the budget, we build the budget using last year's actual enrollment under most circumstances. It is rare that we budget for enrollment growth. This year we budgeted some enrollment growth because it was necessary to jumpstart the expansion in the School of Nursing. So there was a significant comfort level in budgeting and enrollment growth for nursing, and those funds were turned and allocated so that the School of Nursing would have enough resources to hire the faculty. But under most circumstances, we feel more comfortable budgeting on the previous year's actual. State appropriation. Again, different in other states, but we are fortunate enough to have what we call a lump sum appropriation. So Frankfurt doesn't tell us how much we have to spend on salaries or any other category of expense. Since 2009, our state appropriation has been reduced by $14 million. So looking at your decade perspective again, like I did on revenue, in FY 2003, we had approximately $67 million in state appropriation. So thus, we've had about an 8% increase University Farm generates over $300,000, and those funds are returned to the University Farm to support their operation. It's very important that if you're in a self-generated category, that those funds are returned to you for the benefit of your program. Athletics, since I know that's near and dear to this audience, is approximately $6.2 million of self-generated revenue. Sometime in about February, each of the division heads will return income estimates in order for us to build the budget moving forward. Auxiliary Enterprises, $24 million. We have outsourced food services. It was before me, I believe, so it's probably upwards of 20 years ago. So when we say we budget for food services, what we are doing is we're budgeting the commission off of the Aramark contract. Bookstore is self-operated. A lot of campuses have outsourced a bookstore. We did bid it. We determined it was in our best interest to keep the bookstore in-house. There's something fundamental about going to the private sector thinking that their motive is to make a profit. So therefore, if you can operate an efficient bookstore, why would you outsource it if the goal for outsourcing is profit? So we thought it was in our best interest and the students' best interest to try to keep costs down and keep the bookstore self-operated. We have a small printing services, housing, SLF, the Student Life Foundation. We do not own our residence halls, but we have a management contract between the board of the Student Life Foundation and the university to provide all the operating services necessary for the residence hall. So what we are budgeting actually is the reimbursed costs from the Student Life Foundation for operating those programs. Expenditures. We basically have a budget that's cost plus, base plus. While some institutions have tried to do zero-based budgeting, it's very painful. Could you go back to say, what is it that you absolutely need from the ground up? So most divisions are base plus, but the first thing we do centrally is accumulate what we call fixed cost and other commitments. What is it that we need to fund next year before we start thinking about any discretionary expenses? In our fixed cost category, we have a formula to increase the library's budget so that they may have subscriptions, journals, online publications that they need to fund that seem to have fairly sizable increases every year. So we fund that increase as a fixed cost, allowing the library budget to be somewhat protected from inflationary increases in comparison to some other areas of the campus. Contractual obligations, contracts for IT, Blackboard, IT, the elevator contract. We have a whole lot of contracts across campus that we know we have no choice but to pay the rate increases. I mentioned benefit increases. It's been a sizable problem and related to funding the retirement system increases. Faculty promotions, we consider that another near and dear in this audience. We consider that one of your unavoidable costs, but that sounds rather negative, so I'll just tell you that we're very pleased to have that on our fixed cost increase. The last category is maintenance operations. Maintenance and operations would be if we open Gary Ransdell Hall, we obviously have to increase the DFM, facilities management budget, so they have enough money to pay the utility bill. That is usually the typical increase in the maintenance and operations. The other increase may be rate increases from TVA for utilities. But I'll assure you that DFM is doing their very best to contain costs in the utility area to not end up on our fixed cost increase list. This year there was no increase in the fixed costs for our utility. 2% for student financial aid. The debt service is 4%, and obviously utilities, even though it's a large budget, accounts for 3%. Capital, which is totally under budgeted on this campus, is 1%. If you look at just the unrestricted budget instead of the total budget, what you'll find is the personnel expenses account for 58% of our total budget. Again, it poses significant challenges to protect budgeted positions when you implement a budget cut.
How much does that vary from state to state and university to university, if you were to look at that?
I'm not surprised by the numbers. I couldn't quote you a number, but I've always seen numbers that reinforce that higher education is labor intensive.
But I mean, that
46%. I've got any data.
Yeah, I mean, is it generally 46%? Does it range as high as 5?
I
mean,
I really
do you have a sense of that?
I really don't have a number in my head. But I'd be happy to kind of look for you and see if afterward I can get your name. I'll try to find out.
Well, why don't you just send it to
okay.
Bud and
sure.
He'll forward it to the whole.
Sure.
That would be an interesting point for all
okay.
of us.
Okay. We have some national data. A federal agency probably collects it, and we can give you an idea of how our funds are distributed. Now, I'll tell you that inter-institutional comparisons can be a little tricky. I don't think it would sway the number that much. Personnel means it includes all your benefits. In some states, they budget their retirement system in a state personnel office and not in the institutions, but generally from across the United States, I should be able to give you a comfortable. This screen just gives you a little bit of an idea that if you went to our website and you wanted to look at a detailed budget, what type of information would you see? The first column would give you 1 year's worth of actual data, and then the second and the third column would give you 2 years worth of budget. It goes down to the first column, we call them account codes. Actually, the budget for this XYZ is called an index. So again, our terminology may be a little different from where you've been in prior universities. So the index is budgeted. The account codes give you some detail on how funds have been expended in 1 year versus how they are planned to be expended in the next couple of years, which is two budget years. The last slide is what we used when we presented the budget to try to end on a happy note. I get tired sometimes presenting a budget that seems doom and gloom. Try to end on a happy note saying that really this is what we're all about. We're all about the students. We're all about graduation. And therefore, we end with a slide of happy graduates. So our funds are dedicated to certain outcomes. Graduation is one very important. That's the end of my formal presentation. I'm trying to answer any questions. Now that will surprise me. Surely there's at least one question for me. Thank you for letting me come. I am sorry it's been so long for some of the newest members. I don't believe that I've had this opportunity.
If we could quickly backtrack and someone would make a motion to approve the May meeting minutes, that would be
moved.
A second. I need IDs for the record. Yeah, just name and school for John.
Okay,
who is my seconder?
Robert Dido.
Oh, who
Robert
is my?
Dido,
okay, very good. Thank you. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thanks. We have some of our standard reports to do. I would encourage all the reporters to hit the high points. We have action items later on the agenda, and I want to make sure we have a quorum when we get there. So let's see. Jennifer, did you want to make a couple quick announcements?
Just quickly, as we're updating roles and getting email lists all settled, if your name is not on the attendance sheet, please put it down at the bottom or at the end of it so we can add you. Also, if you're not receiving emails, please put your correct email address somewhere on the sheet as well. And when you make motions, make sure you identify yourself so that way we can record you. And thanks for serving.
Molly Kosko, is Molly Kirby here today?
I'm assuming if she's not, that there's no report. Our advisory folks, Regent, Patty Minner.
As requested, I will hit the high points, but my full report is going to be posted on the University Senate's website, as it always is, as soon as I send it to the chair after this meeting concludes. And the links in here will include all of the links that Vice President Meade referred to. So if you want to go to, there's several different points in the budget that I've highlighted, but I do encourage you to go to that website, play around with a little bit. There's lots of interesting information. The board met twice this summer. We met first on June 22nd to approve the operating budget and to have committee meetings for the July business meeting. We met again at the end of July on the 26th and 27th for full board and a retreat. And this report covers three topics: the actions passed at the summer board meetings, the budget challenges we face, and analysis of some previous budgetary decisions. At the June 22nd meeting, there was lengthy discussion about the only item, which was the operating budget, which includes the tuition increase, and I give you the link to that. You should read the narrative that Vice President Meade referred to. That's the thing that she walked through with the board, so you can see it as we see it, has the detailed tuition breakdown. There was lengthy discussion about the 5% tuition increase, how it would be used, and its implications not only for students but for the academic community in general. And I've linked the minutes for you. Minutes aren't always the most exciting thing to read, but these are really interesting. It contains a lot of exchange between myself, Vice President Meade, President Ransdell, and Student Regent Corey Dodds about the implications, not only of 5% tuition increase, but also the decision about which I heard much from you, the decision to charge full price for all online students, not just part-time students. And questions that were raised: are we hitting the price point? Are we hitting it right? Are we hitting above our price point? Are we going to see diminishing returns? Questions about distance learning. This has been something that is very good for faculty, for academic affairs. Our hard work has created opportunities for students. It's created opportunities for faculty to teach online and to enjoy the compensation that comes from that. So again, it's imperative that we don't do anything to, as I put it at the meeting, to kill the goose that lays golden eggs. And there are a lot of golden eggs. And ultimately, if we don't have the price point right, it harms academic budgets, it harms faculty compensation, it harms students who can no longer take these courses. Student Regent Corey Dodds spoke at length. I urge you to read his comments about how WKU is now the third most costly public university in the Commonwealth. And he asked if these tuition costs continue to rise, if there's not enough attention to faculty salaries and other academic matters, when does it happen that we no longer provide the same experience and the same level of academic quality we've had in the past? These are great questions. These are questions we wrestle with and we'll continue to over the years. Although the final vote only included one dissent from Regent Dodds on the tuition increase, again, that's a little deceptive because it was a good and searching conversation, and lots of questions were raised about spending priorities, and I urge continued scrutiny of the impact of tuition increases on every aspect of our enrollment in traditional classrooms, in online education. Provost Emsley may talk to you about the fall 12 enrollment numbers. There are some concerns here, and the things that are happening suggest that the things that I've brought up in this report may have merit. And it's time for a serious conversation about academic priorities, about our price point, and about determining most of all what it is we need versus what we want. When the Board of Regents convened in July for our two-day retreat, we heard presentations on documents you've seen now, the strategic action plan for the next 6 years, and the proposed emphasis on scheduling bi-term courses. Now, unfortunately, the Board of Regents was removed from the discussion between Provost Dimsley and the department heads, which followed the provost's presentation, so I was unable to hear or to participate in that discussion. And I do have to say that it's out without precedent to present such an important proposal in front of the board, even as an information item or a work in progress, prior to its presentation to and its discussion in the shared faculty governance system. However, Regent Dodds and I had a great meeting this summer with Provost Dimsley after our budget meeting on June 22nd, at which the provost shared this idea with us for the first time and solicited our feedback. At the provost's request, the Senate Executive Committee convened in July prior to the board retreat. They joined the conversation, also provided great feedback, and that is linked on the Senate's website. You should absolutely read those minutes. I greatly appreciate Provost Dimsley's continued assurance, both in our private meeting and at the Senate Executive Committee, that this is not a fait accompli, it's not a done deal, but instead it is a proposal that must have faculty support before the conversation can continue. When given the opportunity to speak to my board colleagues during our informal retreat about the bi-term proposal, I discussed many of the concerns that had been raised by my colleagues at the Senate Executive Committee. And I noted most importantly that we have no idea what the effect of such a dramatic shift would be. From academic quality concerns to student enrollment, we're in a challenging time at Western Kentucky University, and we can't make decisions that might damage our academic quality, our intellectual lives, or our student enrollment. The full board meeting was the next day. There were several contracts and real estate purchases on the agenda. I have linked that for you in the report that will go online, and the paper correctly reported that I voted against approving contracts for the athletic director and the men's and women's basketball coaches, which were lumped as one agenda item. This is consistent with my comments at the January Board of Regents meeting. The university needs to quit overfunding entertainment instead of education. Vice President Meade shared numbers for you. The athletic department generates 6.1 or 6.2% of revenue is self-generated. The budget is 21.8 million. Okay? So again, what is the impact of this? We have to fund academics. The latest college rankings from U.S. News and World Report speak directly to this point. We've made a lot of hires considering the economic climate. However, according to U.S. News, WKU's percentage of full-time faculty has decreased from 86% to 84% in 1 year. Until that trend is reversed, and until faculty salaries reach benchmark for the first time in my 19-year career at WKU, then I cannot support additional funding for entertainment that does not produce its own revenue, and if it doesn't produce its own revenue, it needs to face the same difficult decisions that other budget units would in the same circumstance. My other dissenting votes were about using $330,000, that is different, from the university's reserve fund to purchase two properties then owned by fraternities, both of whom are now moving to the Greek Village. My dissent was brought in large part by President Ransdell's narrative prior to the vote. As he described the deal to us, he said, frankly, this is not a very good business deal for the university. Okay, well, if it's not a very good business deal, I'm not really sure why we're bringing it to the board at all and why we're taking $330,000 out of the university reserve in order to buy two houses. Both items passed with my dissent, and soon one of the houses on Chestnut Street will be raised to expand the Chestnut Street parking lot by 50 spaces. That was a $200,000 deal. To spend $200,000 on 50 parking spaces clearly makes them the most expensive spaces in the history of the university. And that brings me to the conclusion. These are challenging times for higher education in the Commonwealth and the nation as a whole. And it's time for our governing board, our administration, our faculty, our staff, and our students to think carefully about what we need to keep the academic mission and intellectual life of the university healthy. Brick and mortar is very nice. Entertainment is lots of fun. But the economic realities we face make it clear we cannot go on as before. There is a difference between what we want and what we need. And I will always advocate for what we need to maintain and improve academic quality and the intellectual life on this campus. That is our mission. And I thank you, as always, for sharing your concerns with me and for allowing me to represent your concerns to the Board of Regents. Thank you. That will be posted later.
Provo Ansley.
Four recommendations from the last meeting. First, from the Graduate Council, which was initially partially approved, pending some additional information. Testing? Nope. Council recommendation partially approved pending some clarification on some staffing issues related to a set of courses. A subsequent recommendation, -01R, which addressed these concerns, was approved. University Council report, -02, approved all except one item, which related to a teacher certification issue, which related not only to UCC but also the Graduate Council, so I referred that back for input from the Graduate Council before further considering it. And probably most importantly, items 3 and 4 referring to the General Education Colonnade Program, which were approved. And I also urge that that implementation committee be set in motion as soon as possible, and I continue to urge that implementation committee start doing its job. We have to get some courses in place very soon, folks. This is going to start this in fall of 14. Regent Minter mentioned, both Vice President Mead and Regent Minter mentioned enrollment. It's been a roller coaster. If you look at the comparison of a given day's enrollment to that of 52 weeks ago, it's the same day of the week a year ago, I've seen numbers ranging from minus 500 and something to minus 100 and something. It fluctuates all over the place, driven by a variety of interesting factors such as dual credit high school enrollments, which come in a block of 100 at a time and so forth. As Anne pointed out, our tuition drives a large chunk of the budget, I believe 44 point something percent. Therefore, when you're short a significant number of tuition paying students, then the amount of discretionary funds to spend is decreased. And that's true this year. We have proceeded with what I call phase one of the staffing plan. That's the first 75% of vacancies. Phase two, which is the remaining 25% plus additional funds from transitional retirees going to full retirements, we'll be able to get some dollars from the summer budget, which continues to be highly profitable. That we're holding, as we would anyway, but we're holding the details until we understand the enrollment picture a little more clearly. Our final enrollment number is determined by the last day to enroll in the fall semester, which includes the second bi-term. So we have not publicly presented our enrollment number yet because, frankly, we don't know what it is. Between now and then, we typically lose a lot of students for non-payment. The Office of Enrollment Management is working very closely with those students to try and get payment plans in place, help them out financially, whatever it is. I encourage you to draw our attention to any issues in that area that you may perceive from your students that are concerned about financial pressures. We're here to help. If we were to publish our enrollment number today, it would be higher than our census number last year. So the issue is keeping the students who are currently enrolled is a major thrust in not only helping those students but also preserving a balanced budget picture. Let's see, FUSE program, Faculty Undergraduate Student Engagement Program. I thank the Herald for a call out in their editorial page. It's great. We funded approximately 60 students between the summer and fall to engage in student faculty-led student research projects. We have another 40 slots for the spring, and the competition is about to start. Dr. Bayless and I will host a lunch, I think it's on Tuesday, where we'll do what any other good granting agency does, is tell intended proposers how to write a compelling proposal. And all students are welcome to attend that. It's in the Kentucky building, and we'll go over the, you know, what to do to present a compelling case for your project. One of the resolutions, or recommendations, rather, that came from Senate last year through the Academic Quality Committee concerned placement of student instructor evaluations online. I approved that recommendation. There is ongoing concern that by doing so, we may restrict the participation rate in said evaluations. With that in mind, we're intending to introduce a kind of optional exercise for the spring semester. Too late to do it for the fall, but for the spring semester, instructors will have the opportunity to develop their own customized online midterm evaluation instrument, results of which are available only to that instructor. They're not part of the normal process where they're sent to your department head and so forth. We hope this will accomplish several things. One, provide feedback to the instructor during the middle of the semester when input is most valuable and can be utilized. And two, to get students used to the online process of doing instructor evaluations. For the fall, we will be giving prizes. It'll be a kind of a raffle, if you like. If by filling in your instructor evaluation, you'll be eligible to receive prizes, which we have not yet determined, but I've allocated about $10,000 of non-budgeted but one-time funds to cover that expense to encourage student participation. Our SACS accreditation proceeds well. We have formed all our committees. Our compliance certification report, something used to be called the self-study, is due in September of 2014, and the follow-up visits from SACS will be in 2015. And I ask you to cooperate with anyone on those committees. If they ask for more detailed credentials, provide them, please. If you know they ask you to put learning outcomes in your syllabus, please do so, because SACS says they're supposed to be there. You'll be hearing more and more about this, and we ask you to all get involved. SACS is very big in this. They don't want this to be an administrative effort. They want this to be a campus-wide effort of ensuring academic quality in our programs. Summer schedule. First, summer enrollment was up 1%. We credit a lot of that to the summer scholarship program, which provided essentially the sixth hour free. We intend to continue that, possibly even more next summer. At the same time, the summer schedule, the 4 days and a half day on Friday, seemed to work rather well. I don't think I received a single concern. And our utility costs were lower than they were the year before, even with more square feet to cool on one of the hottest summers on record. So that seems to work very well, and absent concerns to the contrary, I think we're going to proceed with the same summer schedule next year. So if you have concerns, let me know soon so I can record those. Otherwise, expect next summer schedule to look like this summer schedule. I'm currently in the process of doing faculty continuance, and it is reminding me that our faculty handbook still has flaws in it. There are conflicting statements on successive pages of the faculty handbook regarding what to do in certain situations. I plead with the faculty handbook committee to accelerate the process, and let's have a faculty handbook that's clean and consistent and addresses all the concerns that folks like deans and I myself have to deal with when we're actually, you know, carrying out its wishes. Okay, I want to end on a couple of good notes. The first one may not sound like a good note, but the Cravens entrance to the library is going to be closing in about a week and a half. That is so we can renovate the Cravens fourth floor area into something called Information Commons, which will be a very attractive and, you know, focused area for students to congregate, share ideas, interact with technology, and so forth. And we're aiming to have that open by the spring semester, which is why we have to close a little early for the construction to proceed. And the glass to me, my side of the table is always half full. I'm looking at the U.S. News and World Report rankings, and we went up 3 points compared to last year. We have the highest freshman retention rate of any university in the state of Kentucky. We are ranked second in the state to Murray State, and significant measures above Moorhead, Eastern Kentucky, and Northern Kentucky. Our average graduation rate is one of the highest in the state, 49%. We can and we will do better. And looking at these numbers to try and assess how to climb in the rankings, I'm looking at the people above us in the rankings and say, how did they get that higher score? And I think the answer is very straightforward. It's our acceptance rate. Our acceptance rate is 92%. The group I'm looking at, three or four notches up, have numbers like 37, 41, 34, things of that order. They're much more selective in their admissions. The new admissions policy, I think, will help that by allowing us to decline admission to students with certain combinations of GPA and ACT, students who, in practice, weren't showing up anyway. But we were admitting them, which was hurting the rankings, and we weren't getting enrollments as a result. This way, the enrollments won't happen, but they weren't happening anyway, and our rankings should climb. So I'm actually very pleased to report that we climbed 3 points in the rankings from last year. Next year, we hope to climb even higher. We've implemented a new scholarship program. Our current scholarship program essentially is for top-tier scholarships, you know, 3.9 GPA and an ACT of 31 or higher, sorry, to compete. We're expanding this significantly to students' GPAs from 3.3 to 3.9, ACTs from 26 to 31. New names of scholarships include the Spirit Makes the Master Scholarship, the Red Towel Scholarship. The sad fact is many students with very respectable GPAs and ACT scores were choosing to go elsewhere because we weren't giving them partial scholarship money. This way we hope they will enroll here. Yes, we will only collect effectively 70% or 85% of the tuition, depending on which scholarship they are awarded, but that's better for the overall enrollment picture and for the overall revenue picture than if they went elsewhere. So that's my report.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am Corey Dodds, the president of the student government this year. I will keep it very short, I assure you. First, I'd like to introduce you to the student representatives who will be serving in this body. We have Brittany Crowley, who is our Director of Academic and Student Affairs in SGA, Kane Alvey, who is our Administrative Vice President, and Chris Costa, who is the Speaker of our Student Senate. Dr. Minner alluded earlier to my vote on the budget and tuition increase. Her statements were accurate. At first glance, it may seem as though I voted against that simply because it was increased tuition, and certainly the financial burden that we placed on our students was a compelling interest in that, but I believe that if students are going to be assessed more tuition, they should get something out of it, and I didn't feel as the increase in academic quality in this budget was there, so I felt compelled to vote against it. At our first meeting, we had a resolution that you should be receiving now that was proposed in our Student Senate. It passed unanimously by the Senate and the Executive Cabinet. That is basically in opposition to the proposed bi-term academic calendar model and the per-credit hour tuition assessment. I'd just like to take a moment to make it clear what the intent of this resolution is. There may be some debate over what is the current proposal or what was originally proposed and whatnot. This resolution strictly opposes an academic calendar based on 7-week bi-term sections, essentially. This resolution does not oppose faculty and independently offering bi-terms. We certainly encourage that. But we oppose any mandatory shift to a 7-week academic calendar, and I thought you should be aware of that. If there are not enough copies, that resolution is available on the SGA website at wku.edu/SGA. So, thank you.
Thank you, Corey. Next order of business is our committee reports at Graduate Council.
Sir, we would move to approve the September report.
Lauren Bland from the Department of Communication Disorders in the College of Health and Human Services. We'd like to move an item from consent to action.
Okay.
Can you call up College of Education and Behavioral Services to change the revise the program?
It is action.
It's in the action.
It's the polls for discussion.
Oh, okay. Separated from the report.
I'm sorry.
Okay. It's the second to the last item. Okay, we have to go ahead and this is graduate faculty only. We have to go ahead and vote on the consent items. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thanks. If you, I think the next report is academic quality. Okay.
We're not done.
Oh, we're going to do the action item now?
Yeah.
They have to.
I asked for a parliamentarian. Okay, thanks. I'll get this down eventually. I got the book, but I haven't read it all yet. Discussion?
I'm Lauren Bland. I'm in communication disorders, and we're one of the teacher prep programs throughout the university. There have been, at the state level, there have been major changes to teacher certification. One of them is that field experiences, 200 hours of field experiences are being required now in order to be certified to teach. The statute says, I'll save you all from the whole thing that the statute says, but the statute says that these experiences can take place in family resource centers, youth services centers, and tutoring, interaction with families, attendance in school board meetings, participation in school board, professional learning community, and then in another place it lists, it says maybe a homeless shelter or some other places. So we're asking that the amendment be, that it be changed to an actual college.
It says
we're asking that the wording be adjusted to campus for 200 hours of off-campus field experience in approved school settings, and we'd like the phrase added to include related agencies that conform to state and national regulations. That just, we think it doesn't change anything. It won't take it out of the purview of the School of Teacher Education. We just feel like it just gives it more clarity that it doesn't have to physically take place within the bricks of a school building.
Am I close to what you're talking about here?
Right there.
Yes, right there.
So this is the amendment that you're proposing, adding the bold-faced language.
Yes. And we're just wanting more clarity that related agencies be included, which is what the statute does allow for. And we're just wanting the wording that WKU is adopting to be consistent with that. It would still fall under the approval of the School of Teacher Education. It wouldn't come away from them.
So it's the highlighted yellow line?
Yes, the highlighted yellow, and we're asking that the red be deleted because approved then goes into school settings.
Okay. Where is the delete up here?
This
is deleting.
That one word would be deleted.
Deleting the word approved.
Right.
And we're adding the bold-faced language.
And then you're adding
the yellow.
Problematic.
No.
The deletion is the bigger problem.
You'd be adding what's in yellow in approved school settings to or to include related agencies that conform to state and national regulations.
Okay, thank you. So the way I understand it, the word approved here is deleted. And then we're adding in approved school settings to include related agencies that conform to state and national regulations, correct? And we're adding and related agencies?
No.
Or is that coming out?
I think that was already there.
Okay, that's fine. That's what came to me originally.
I just have to represent the School of Teacher Education and CEBS, Janet Tassel. We have been working in conversations with the individuals representing this motion as well in this conversation. And just to represent where the conversation is coming from on our end, the concern is that EPSB regulations state that the field observation hours have to be directly connected to P-12 experiences in P-12 public school and private school settings. And the list that was read is correct, but the concern is when we start adding the wording that's suggested is that it muddies the water as far as the policy goes. So we are not in favor of this wording change.
Yes. I need your...
Aaron Wickman.
Yeah.
Could you explain perhaps how it muddies the water?
Yeah.
One of the concerns is that when the national and state regulations, wording is added in there, that is opening up something that is not suggested by the essence of what EPSB is suggesting within the regulations. Also, it is very clear in the regulations that the connection has to be directly tied to P-12 public and private school settings for these experiences, and not things, for example, like at a daycare that's not tied to a school or an accredited school or an extension office. So in places where we might find valuable experiences and have done observations in the past and still might do for observations, they cannot be part of those 200 hours that we count as those 200 hours now.
I think the issue is that the proposed amendment would allow field experiences in areas that meet a national standard, which is good in of itself, but the state licensure board is requiring 200 hours by their specific state standards. But this modification would allow a student to collect part of those 200 hours according to some national standard, which would not accommodate the standards board, which means our student couldn't get certified. It's especially critical because, unlike most of the other certification magic that goes on with teacher certification, the state standards board is going to track those 200 hours themselves. We won't be doing it internally, So they'll be tracking those hours hour by hour, and if an hour gets accumulated that doesn't match their standard, and this amendment says that could happen, then if they're an hour short, they don't get certified.
Okay, thank you. May I ask another question? Then what would be the advantage of what you're putting?
Well, I was going to ask, is there a wording that you could suggest that would be very clear that it does expand on the places where it could, of a way for the WKU policy to be consistent with the statute in some way? So if you wanted to have the national taken out, would that suffice? Because I think that the only issue is that by the current wording that I'm looking at, it says school settings, and that's not what the state guidelines say, as I see them.
So. The school settings list, so are you, I'll stand up so I can see you. The school settings list that is the diverse list on the two pages of 128 and 129 of the agenda book that we've received from BPSB. That list that you read from, does that not comprehensively include the things and the policy as it's written, do you not believe that that is encompassing those things? Is that what your...
That's my concern, is that, and our concern of the... that it's not, it doesn't appear to cover that. So if there is a way for the wording to cover that, I think we're open to whatever would be appropriate.
Could they reword it to say approved, is it EPSB standards? Would that make people happy?
Hey, folks, would you make sure you identify yourselves?
Oh. Angie Jerome, communication.
And also, I guess I'll have to be a little more firm when it comes to just handing the mic to people. There are some folks that have had their hands up, so I think you needed to speak.
Steve Miller, Education. For those involved, is there a deadline by which this is done? And if not, is it possible that representatives from the College of Education, Teacher Education, and the other unit in question, we table this and they work this out and bring this back next month so that we're not quibbling over these details during a faculty senate meeting? And one possibility, if we have to have outside hours over and above 200 or whatever language that is, but if that could be worked out by the two units, is that a possibility?
You can make it a possibility.
Well, I would table if there is not a deadline to get this done.
I can't speak to the deadlines. That would require somebody with a higher level of. Yes.
I think the state statute says that it needs to be implemented by September 1, 2013.
Gosh.
Move to table.
Got a second.
Are you moved?
No.
Steve. Steve.
You want
yes, Steve. Move to table definitely to a next meeting? Or,
next meeting.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second, Kindersley.
Okay, we have a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Ayes have it. Yes.
One quick comment on that. The very issue we're discussing was the UCC recommendation that I did not approve last time, pending review by the Graduate Council. So I'd also urge that any wording changes that are made also be reviewed by UCC as well as the Graduate Council, because the proposal that UCC approved was as originally worded. And if there are wording changes, they need to review it also.
Thank you. Academic quality.
Give me just a title, just for Michelle. We met last week in our first meeting, and the work that we did will be forwarded to the SEC for approval before it comes back here for the October meeting of the full Senate. But so to introduce myself very quickly, for those of you who don't know me, my name is Scott Jordan. I teach in the art department, and I'm the chair this year of the Academic Quality Committee. If you or any of your constituents have issues related to academic quality that you'd like to see added to the agenda this year, please send them to me. We'll be happy.
Thank you. John White was here earlier. There is no UCC report. He had some business to take care of, so he just asked me to pass that along. General Education, that's Amanda Drost. I know they've met, but they had no report filed to the SEC. Faculty Welfare, yes. Thank you. Did we miss anybody? The International Equation Council is just an information item. If you want to know what they did during their last meeting, you can find it on the website. Eventually, I'll have someone in here to speak about this council. Education, I'm sorry. It's my type. Well, they're a part of it. At any rate, they'll be in to talk about that council in the very near future. Oh, thank you. There you go, Jen. That's okay. We have an item of old business. That was the faculty workload policy that was tabled definitely until this meeting. The policy's been posted on the website. I believe, if I recall correctly, the reason why this was tabled was because the policy, Dr. Petty said the policy had not been posted in sufficient time. Is that correct? Okay. So we have the policy back again. I would entertain some kind of a motion.
Move to accept. Move to approve whatever we're doing.
Approve. Do I have a second?
We're approving.
Second, Charles Ward.
Is there any discussion? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Okay, so a question that we had in Janet Tassel, School of Teacher Education, a question that we have about the history of this policy is in reading through the policy and looking at the last page of the policies that it's related to in Section IV, and trying to get our heads kind of wrapped around where is this policy coming from and what is this policy about and how will it affect us? We noticed that it was connected to the summer and winter teaching policy, which is policy 1.2120. So as those of you that were on Senate last year remember, we had approved that back in November of 2011. And in pulling that policy together and researching that policy and trying to figure out the connection and researching that policy, I noticed that the related policy to that in Section IV, which is 4, the related policy is 1.1160, which is faculty workload and compensation. And I started to get really confused when I saw that in putting together my thoughts for trying to figure out the faculty workload and compensation policy and the history and talking to a lot of my colleagues from my department and other departments across the university. So one of the questions I have, and then started trying to find what is the policy 1.1160? Is there a policy already in place for faculty workload and compensation? And where is it? And then I found out that there's this policy clearinghouse on her website and tried to find it there, and it's not there. So I don't know the history of this policy, if there used to be one and it's no longer. So that's one of the questions that I would like to know if Provost Imsley could speak to us today possibly about that, or maybe the history of this or why this policy has come about.
Without the website in front of me, I don't know. I mean, I simply ask you to accept or vote on the policy as written. Earlier drafts that may have referred to a policy that might have been in development and wasn't approved or was can't. I'm not sure the detailed history. I know it's had a long history, but the policy as stated refers to two related policies, one of which summer-winter teaching, which is this body did recommend approval, and is consistent with this policy in as much as one semester hour of summer teaching is equivalent to 1/4 of a month of effort, and therefore 3 months of effort is 12 hours of teaching, and that's the essential content of 1.2120. I really don't, obviously can't produce 1.1160 because it's not on the website. I don't know which draft date had that policy on it. Okay. Here comes Rich for the rescue. Okay, you have 2120 refers to, it may be that 1160 is an earlier number of what is now, and so we would have to go back and change 2120 to cross-reference to whatever the number of this one is, I think is all it is, probably. I believe so. I mean, so we would, accepting that, either... Is 1.2080 already used for something? Is 1.1160, is that right? No, but they intended to talk to each other. They intended to talk to each other. Yes. But the reason is the 1.1 policies are faculty policies, 1.2 are fiscal policies. And this got a 1.2 number because it relates to compensation. And the earlier draft may have been a 1.1, and that's a logical sequence number for where it would logically fall in the 1.1 policies. But I accept that if we move this policy forward with this numbering scheme, that we'd have to change policy 1.2120 to refer to this number, not the old number. I think is what you're saying, right? Yes, sir.
One thing, if this was a clerical error, and you make that change, but when you go back and check that, okay. It turns out there was something other than just a misprint or something, that there was something substantive there, then I would object to this going forward and being corrected in your office if it was something other than a clerical error. If it isn't clerical, then it must be brought back. Or something that
I understand. I'm not sure.
I guess there could be more than just a clerical error.
I'm guessing that 1160 was an early numbering scheme applied to this policy, which, because it's taken so long to get this point, changed its number somewhere along the way. I can't imagine anything else. 1.1160 has never been brought to this body. I don't have my computer. The only place that's going to be is my computer in the office, and I'll look and see if this was ever called 1.1160, or if I simply made a typographical error in 1.2120. But I'll check on that.
If it is something other than clerical, can't be brought back.
But it's a related. I'm not sure what the substance of the concern would be, even if it wasn't. I mean, it just says this is a related policy, and we refer to it. It does not change the substance of this policy. It's simply in a list at the end of related policies to which this relates in some way. It's not part of the policy, per se. But I'll check that anyway, sir. I'll see what happened there.
Can I get the floor now? I think Rico Tyler, School Teacher Education. I have two questions. One is procedural, since I'm warming this chair for the first time this term. A moment ago, it looked like we were about ready to vote on this. So this is the second reading of this policy? It was tabled. So has it had a first reading?
Yes. It was read and was...
But if it was... Okay, so this is the second. I just want to make sure.
It was tabled in May.
But when was the first? But that wasn't the first reading.
So it hasn't had a first reading.
If it was tabled in the middle of a
Kelly, can you help out on this?
If it was,
it was only going to have one reading. It was correct. Brought forward in May, and it was tabled till this meeting.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think outside of procedural issues, these sort of things, I think our charter has, except for procedural matters, all proposals get two readings.
No. That's not correct.
I think it is.
No, it is not.
I think Article 3, I looked it up a minute ago. I just want to be clear where we are in this proposal. I think I'm reading it here. Section I, procedural matters brought before the Senate shall require only one reading. Substantive matters shall require two readings.
Kelly?
What I did the last few years was basically FCC made the determination of whether something required two readings. FCC on policies, FCC made the decision whether something required one reading or two readings. That was the precedent set up the last 2 years.
Which could be challenged by the faculty. That could be challenged by this body.
I mean, I'm going to make the assumption that a faculty compensation policy is a substantive issue, I think.
Don't worry about it. Yes.
Do we even have a quorum to vote on anything anymore?
I think we still have a quorum, but we're bleeding.
I know, that's what I was asking.
I'm waiting for some direction from the floor. Mac. Robert?
My suggestion would be, and Dr. Emsley will come over and kick me, since there seems to be disagreement on whether this should be a two or one reading item, it's waited this long, close off debate, count this as the first reading, and then it's top of old business on the next agenda. That would be my suggestion.
Well, I don't think you made a motion.
I'll make that a motion.
And in your second?
Can I second his motion?
Yes. Thank you. Discussion? Yes, sir.
I'm not going to go kick you, Robert. I'm not even going to disagree with you. But I would just point out procedurally that if the last time was the first reading, why was anything tabled since no action could have been taken? I would argue that an action to table a motion implies that an action is pursuant, and therefore that effectively requires a vote. I mean, I'm fine. But again, as you correctly point out, we've waited long enough. I can put a new date on it, find out about this issue, about this other policy, and bring it back next time. I am getting a little concerned about this dragging on and on and on. I do remind the Senate they are required to provide input to policies, not to approve them. And at some point, I'm going to take this to AC anyway.
Well, Mac, the other possibility is, in your authority as chair, you can rule that this was the second reading and move to a vote. But there is a motion on the floor which will have to be voted upon first.
Yeah, I think
there's two motions on the floor, one to vote and one to table.
table supersedes, so I think we need to address the motion to table. Is there any discussion on the motion to table? All those in favor say aye. All those opposed?
Nay.
Okay, that fails. So now we have a motion on the floor for approval of the policy, correct?
And as I said, you can rule that this constitutes a second reading of the motion.
Well,
just do it.
I mean, look, I'm okay.
Can we still discuss?
Name, please.
Martha Day.
Martha.
If you look on page 4 of this policy, where it talks about activities and external contracts and grants, academic year under A, part 2, it says during the 9-month academic year, activity on sponsored projects is generally considered part of overall effort and consequently entails no additional compensation to faculty member. What about faculty members who provide services to external agencies that are above and beyond their normal load in a contract? So, for example, we have a grant that runs in another city, in Louisville, and it's difficult for me to compel faculty members to go to Louisville and provide services in those schools unless I can compensate them when their normal load exists on the main campus. And so I have concerns about that part of the workload policy.
I think the expedient way to move forward here is for me to rule that this is a first reading item, that it was first read and it was tabled to this meeting. And then I would suggest maybe, Robert, that you bring back your tabling motion so that we can get this cleared up so that the body can make a reasoned decision.
So what you're going to do is to give time for these questions to receive an answer.
Correct.
Well, then I would suggest there's no further need for a motion. You simply follow the charter, rule that it's a two-reading item, that the first reading is now concluded, and it will come forward as old business in the next Senate meeting. And so you can just do that yourself.
What he said. Yes.
For people who have questions about this, like the question that was just raised, can't Dr. Emsley, can't they talk to you? I mean, this sounds like a clarification of the policy that we don't need to listen to here. So why don't, you know, if you've got questions about this, talk to his office, and then when we get here, if there's a concern, you can bring it up here.
You want me to speak to that? I've been answering that same question for a year now. Federal law requires that any work performed for WKU, and if it's a WKU contract or grant, that is WKU effort, be part of the overall regular workload for a faculty member, except in, I'll get the words not quite right, unusual situations involving work in remote locations or across campus, across department consulting. It's a federal document. This is OMBA 21. When I was a faculty member, if I devoted a certain amount of my effort to a grant, the grant paid for that effort. My effort in other areas was reduced accordingly. That's the correct way of compensating faculty. 100% is 100%, 100%. You can only have 100% total effort. It can be distributed in different ways, but it cannot amount to more than 100% effort. That is federal law, and we're simply writing down a policy that is compliant with that statement, which is written in the policy to clarify this is not my idea or somebody else's idea. It is federal documentation. If you consult for an outside agency, not through a WKU grant or contract, that's different. That is compensation that we don't speak to. We don't determine the rate. and the policy allows for up to 1 day a week of external consulting, but those funds do not flow through the WKU payroll system. That's my simple answer. We can sit down and discuss in more detail if you want.
Okay, we pretty much decided to move on. When Kelly Badol was chair and I was chairing faculty welfare, we met with the provost. So I don't want anybody to have the impression that he's not been accessible or he hasn't tried to answer our questions. And I think the product of those meetings was the policy that we brought forward. We'll bring it back next meeting. Again, if there are other concerns or questions, it would be very expedient to take care of them before we get here. That's why we post stuff 2 weeks in advance so that you can read through it and people can email people and say, hey, what does all this mean? So I would encourage you to do that between now and our next meeting. The next action item that requires a vote from us is the honorary doctorate policy. This comes to you with a favorable recommendation from the SEC. I would entertain a motion. Okay. Thank you, Guy. Who's the second?
Me.
Thank you.
Me.
Is there any
My last name is me.
Yes. Not me. Me. Is there any discussion? Are you sure? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. We'll move that policy along then. We have an important election that we do have to conduct. It requires you using a ballot. This is an election for representation on the University Academic Complaint Committee. The ballot instructions are on the top of the ballot that you'll receive. Pretty clear. Circle four names of faculty members and two names of students. You have to circle four faculty and, I'm sorry? Well, four is the magic number. Up to four would be fine, too. And up to two students. The outcome of the election, then, is that the top faculty vote-getter is the committee rep, the second person is the alternate, and same for the students. So raise your hands high if you need a ballot. Guy, could I get your assistance when you're done to gather up some ballots? Yes, sir. This is a senator vote. Yes. Student senators should have a ballot. We all good? Guy is going to collect the ballots when you're done. If you just raise your hand, he'll gather them up. To expedite things along, we will tally the ballots. They'll be hermetically sealed until they're appropriately tallied, and we will announce the results to you all via an email and a posting on the Senate website. Thank you.
Is there any more ballots?
Any more ballots out? Okay. Okay, we're going to, okay, voting's over. Going to march ahead. Everybody wants to go home, please. I'm good with that. I just want to run through very quickly this list of appointees that we have for various university committees, not Senate committees, university committees. So just bear with me very quickly, and then I would encourage you to help me. Dr. Ann Mead mentioned that the Budget Council has been revived. I think this is a very important thing for the Senate, that we are being asked to have representation on the Budget Council. She explained to me prior to the meeting that, well, you know, back when the Budget Council kind of faded away, the reason why we did that is because we really didn't have any money to spend, or we had money to spend, and now that we don't, we didn't really think we needed a Budget Council. Well, I think when you don't have money to spend, the Budget Council is just as important as when you do. And I think there needs to be a faculty voice that way. Just for clarification, the Budget Council representatives do not have to be senators. So the procedure that we would follow is very similar to other university and ad hoc committee appointments, in that if you will send me the names of folks who you think would be good representatives for the faculty on the Budget Council, I'll send out an email reminding folks, and we'll put together a slate that the SEC can review and then make recommendations to President Ransdale. We offer names. He accepts. That's the procedure for this committee. The Professional Education Committee, or the Professional Education Council, needs a Senate representative. I can post some information about that or connect you with the person who can best fill in on what those folks do. But all these people are eager to get their committees fully staffed, and I'm certainly eager to have that happen with our own standing committees. Darlene Applegate is the chair of the Student Research Council. I posted information, or I sent out information about what that council does. One of the main things they do in the spring is they have their research kind of forum, which is excellent. I've served as a judge, and I've participated in the last two. So please read that and suggest to me folks or yourselves who might be willing to serve. And then finally, we have the Parking and Transportation Appeals Board, which is near and dear to my heart. when I found out that if you have appeal, you're not even allowed to go to the meetings, which is just ludicrous, I would really like some really good people to tell me what's going on that committee and what they're doing with appeals. Francesca has served, and she's agreed to continue to serve. So I need two volunteers, and the reason why they take three people is so that they can rotate them through the meeting schedule so that somebody doesn't have to be there every single week, and that's why they would like three names. So that's all the business at hand with regard to university-wide kind of committees. Finally, just for assurances for everyone in the room, the handbook committee is underway. They're working. Paul Markham is chairing. I've passed along marked up documents of the handbook that have gone through the provo and Kelly and myself, and they're underway. The Colonnade the Colonnade Committee is lacking at-large representatives. I have 15 nominations in hand, which I think is great. The SEC will cull through those, and we'll make sure that those folks get as seated as quickly as they can so that they can join in that group's work. That committee is being chaired by Robert. And Robert had his hand up.
Is that all your announcements?
That's it for me.
I have a proposal that I wanted to put before the body as new business, but since we have a thin house and I think it's important that this get full discussion, I would like to present my motion and then immediately have it tabled until next meeting so that it would come under old business because it has to do with the bi-term plan.
I believe this is it, correct, Robert?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll read it to you. Whereas the provost bi-term proposal has the potential to impact significantly faculty work life, academic quality, and WKU's educational mission, whereas Provost Emsley has given public assurance that this plan would need widespread faculty support before it could be implemented, and whereas Provost Emsley has also assured the university community that this proposal has been sent forward for discussion purposes, the University Senate of WKU resolves that any by-term plan must be vetted by the appropriate Senate committees and receive the approval of both the University Senate and WKU's Board of Regents before it is implemented. I move that this be tabled until next meeting.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Name, please. Thank you. Any discussion on the motion to table until definitely until October? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Is there any other business to come before the Senate? I'd entertain a motion to adjourn. Thank you very much.
Folks, please make sure you sign the sheet going out if you haven't done so already. Cross out.
Yes.
Okay.